This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and for readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is sponsored by Larson & Larson. They're my intellectual property lawyers. They should be yours. And next week, the Writer's Legal Eagle, Bill Larson, will be here in the studio to answer your questions. So look forward to that next Thursday. Now, I'm excited to have in the studio with me today a writer who actually she has to wear many hats today because she's a very prolific writer. And we're going to talk to her about not just her current book that I know she's promoting right now, which is called Imperfect Echoes, Writing Truth and Justice with Capital Letters. Lie and Oppression with Small. That's a big title. It's Carolyn Howard Johnson. Hi, Carolyn.
Hello, Patsy, and hello, Tampa.
Okay, well, we're happy to have you here. Now, you know, as I was saying, I love talking to writers, and I have, you know, writers who talk about all their different books. But with you, we're talking about a lot different genres. You know, it's fascinating that you have this beautiful book of poetry out, which is called Imperfect Echoes. And I want to talk to you about that because it is really quite an amazing book. And then, of course, I want to also talk to you about your series of frugal books, which are designed for writers.
Right. Well, and those frugal books are almost as precious to me as my poetry books and my fiction, because they've helped so many writers, and I use them as textbooks when I taught at UCLA. So, and actually, that's what got me started, was they needed some marketing textbooks for writers, because at the time, marketing for writers was either unknown or kind of frowned upon. We were supposed to just sit back and let our publishers do it.
Well, today you're going to wear three hats. We're going to talk first. We'll talk about your book of poetry, and then we're going to talk to you about your book about how authors can promote their books, and that's going to be a different hat. And the third hat is going to be your editor hat. So we have to try to imagine you in different hats. Now, for the poet, what hat would you wear? What kind of hat do you think?
Well, I guess I would wear a newbie hat. I was a lit major many, many decades ago and loved poetry then, but I didn't really start writing poetry seriously for publication until I learned that I liked the symbol and the metaphor and the imagery when I was writing fiction, probably as much as I liked the story. So I dug in and started writing some poetry and just love it.
Well, you are really an excellent poet.
Thank you.
What I love, and I told a lot of people when I talk to people like veterans who want to do something, I say, have a look at poetry, because you can start with poetry and they're short enough so that they can capture your attention, and it's so wonderful to be able to read somebody like you who talks about everyday things. It's not something, you know, that's out of the range of possibility. I mean, one of your lines, I'm going to just try to say it, and it just shows the type of thing that one can turn an everyday thing into a beautiful line. And I'm going to read it because I didn't memorize it. And it's called, it's just from the middle of one of your poems, warriors to be who think war is spick and span.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that's
and, you know, yeah, that's probably even more to your point, because it was originally spoken by my 12-year-old grandson.
Wow.
It was actually before he served two tours of duty in Iraq, and it was sometime after the Bush the First war, where we went in and just won a war from the air. I don't know how many of your listeners will remember that, but and the people his age, as he says, just assumed that there wasn't really that much death and gore involved in it, and nothing like the Second World War, or certainly the First World War. They just sort of been forgotten, and the attitude was that it's okay, that it's a way to do things that. Regardless of the fact that we might find better ways.
Well, now, this book, there are a lot of poems in it that relate to war and to the destruction that goes around war and the things like that. But it also has a lot of poems that are just everyday kind of poems. And so, you know, for people who just want to read a very moving poem, They will find it in your book.
I'm not sure also if you noticed, but as a former journalist, that's how I started out in writing. I write in sentences. It's called the Fresno School of Poetry, and my mentor at UCLA, a well-known poet in California, was taught a class, and I fell in love with it because it is quite journalistic. And that means that where there are line breaks, if you just keep reading it as a sentence until you come to a comma or a period, you're reading it just like you would a prose sentence. So people who say they don't like poetry find it really accessible and easy to read. Just until you find a period, just keep reading it like you're reading a sentence.
And it does flow. The poems flow so beautifully. Now the part that I read was from a poem called Belgium's Death Fields. Now, this book is you've dedicated it, or the profits go to Amnesty International, is that right?
Right.
Because many of the poems, as I said, do relate to war. And
things like the imprisonment of journalists, and they do a fantastic job of keeping the world on its toes, so to speak. They do the research necessary for the rest of us to know the stuff that often isn't reported in the news.
Now, is there a particular poem that you'd like to share with us from this collection?
Well, let's see. I kind of like... The very first one, because it kind of explains why I travel, why I like poetry. It allows me to search out and reach other people, you know, in their hearts, in their bones. It's called It's in the Knowing. I think it's maybe the second poem in the book. I want to know how my marrow ran in their bones. If these Socratic figures inspired Picasso, flat-faced, Miro expressionless, but Quakers who stitched sunbonnet girls on quilts knew Keros not at all, nor farmers and fishers, nor those who pillaged their ancient shards. Mayans pulled faceless dolls from husks of corn, never knew this one, broken arm, vagina visible between its open legs, harp in its lap. Still, its music melts over five millenniums to touch me, to allow me to put my face on its. And of course, that's a reaction to a piece of art in a museum.
Well, as I said, you capture the images. You're so great at that. And when people read poetry nowadays, I know that, you know, it's important that they have this visual connection, that the minute they read it, they start seeing it in their mind's eye, and it's you do a beautiful job here.
Thank you very much. And that means a lot. That means a lot to me.
Well, you know, I'll just do the first few lines of the War Museum at Oslo, which I thought was just so well done. Raindrops surf my windshield, slip across my reflection. Tears, not fettered by gravity, I look into my father's face. Decades gone, rather than my own. Years later, I search for family. Something is, you know, it's in its way that the very simplicity of the words, the very everydayness of the words, are so telling and so moving.
Well, you know, it's interesting that so many people remember some of their college or high school poetry literature classes when they used artificial structure that didn't sound like anything, or Shakespeare that didn't sound like anything that we were that we were speaking today, vocabulary that we didn't understand often, and poetry has changed over the years. At least in my opinion, really great poetry is of course A, from the heart, and B, is quite easy to read. The idea is to communicate with images that affect, as opposed to obfuscating what you're trying to say. So I think anybody who in your audience who hasn't read poetry for a while should grab a book, preferably by some poet they've never read before, and try it again. They might find that they like it.
Well, I think that if they're going to grab a book, they should grab this book. It's called Imperfect Echoes. And as you said, this Fresno School of Poetry makes poetry very approachable. It's just something that, in a way, when you read it, you think, well, I could do that, which is a good thing. You know, of course, it takes time, it takes, you know, work, it takes practice. But I think it's a wonderful thing if people read a book and they say, you know, I could do that. I could do that if I sat down and because everybody has their family stories, the you know, grandfather who was a particular type of person, or the aunt who had just something that she did that you still hold in your heart. And if you can sit down and write this in this sort of free flowing style of writing sentences, and I think it's just a wonderful training ground for people who are interested in starting to write.
And it's this kind of, it's not that poetry hasn't always been open to humor, but it works very well for humor. It works very well for little nostalgic poems, as you pointed out. And one of the beauties of poetry is, as you also alluded to, is that you can sit down and read a poem on a busy day, maybe as part of meditation or something like that. It's not something that you necessarily have to spend hours doing. There are little breaks between it, and two and a half minutes of poetry a day could probably make a difference in a life.
I think so, and I really strongly going to recommend this book to my listeners. I'm going to buy several copies myself and deliver it personally down to the Veterans Hospital. We have here in St. Petersburg a fantastic VA hospital, and I know that particularly the war poetry will really touch them and might get them to think about what happened to them and where they can move on to other things. And as I said, some of the poetry is very funny. You have some very humorous poetry in there, and it's really a great book.
Oh, thank you, and it's great of you to share your obvious love of literature with so many others. The vet idea is wonderful. My husband is a vet and just finished a play about that, as a matter of fact. So that was awarded by he was given an award by the, let me get this right, the Marine Heritage Foundation for his play. So veterans are And military is a theme that runs through both of our work.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear that. And so the minute I read this, I said, I have to get some copies and bring it down to the VA hospital. Now, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to put on one of your other hats. And we'll start because everybody, all of my listeners, want to know how to promote their books. So we'll come back and see what hat you're going to be wearing, okay?
Great, okay.
Hold on.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script. Get your script read by the group or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Carolyn Howard Johnson, who is putting on our second hat for this program. And this is, we're going to be talking about her book, Frugal Book Promoter, How to Get Nearly Free Publicity on Your Own or by Partnering with Your Publisher.
Patsy, I have to tell you how I love your theme music. I haven't heard that typewriter song for years.
I love it. I just
how can your writer audience not just love to just tune in just to hear it?
I know it gives me a thrill every time I hear it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I started typing on the Selectric, and you know I still love that sound. I think it's I wish they had a computer keyboard that made the Selectric sound.
And I bet they could do that, and I bet you should get a commission for the idea.
I should, because I can just type for hours listening to that sound. It's so wonderful.
Really.
So we are back now, and we're going to talk about this. It's a second edition of the Frugal Book Promoter, right?
Absolutely. And if any of your writing audience is interested in getting it, do not get the first edition. The second one has been expanded and updated, and you really don't want to go for that first edition, but Amazon won't take it down. So it has a picture of the Frugal Editor typeface with coins for the frugal aspect as part of the font itself.
Yeah, it's important to get this second edition because you have so many very valuable links in it that are current, and just a wonderful resource for writers.
Exactly.
Now, wow, talk about promoting books. You know, authors, just love writing. they love, you know, every author I talk to, they can spend hours just writing and just they're so happy. They forget where they are. They forget what they're doing. They forget the dishes. They forget, you know, all sorts of things. And because they're just having this joy that we get when you put something down on paper. And then reality sinks in. And you
reality sets in, and they're going to have to do some more writing.
But it's not the kind of writing they like.
Not necessarily creative writing, exactly. But I try to convince people that marketing can be, if not as much fun, almost as much fun.
Uh-huh. Well, good.
Because we've got some new skills to learn. And we always like to learn, you know, new genres and new skills regarding our writing. And there's something kind of addictive about getting our books out there and seeing how other people appreciate it and the good that the books are doing in the world. And I really believe that most writers are teachers at heart, even if they're creative writers, that there's something about both professions where we want to share with other people. And if our book isn't being read, if our book isn't being read, then that's not happening. And oftentimes, even when our book has been published by well-known publishers, it isn't being read to the extent that it could be if the author were more involved. So,
Even the big houses, they just, first of all, they just don't do the kind of publicity that they used to do. And if they do it, it's for only the very, very big named authors. So
yeah, we can't all be named Stephen King, can we?
No, we can't. And so the problem, of course, is having to get out there and promote. And last week I had Denise Grover Swank on. Now, she writes in many genres. She's got like series in, you know, romance and romance mystery and romance paranormal and whatever. I don't know how she writes so much. And she's done all of this in 5 years. But what I learned from her and what she said to me, you know, on the program, and then I later looked at her website, she set herself goals. She said her initial, when she first came out with her first book, she said, I want to sell 25 this month, I want to sell 50 next month. Now, of course, she was very serious about getting out there and promoting her book, and she managed her book came out in July, and by the end of December, she had sold 28,000 books.
Wow.
Way past her goal, you know, way past what she had. But she set those goals, and she went out there, and she promoted, and without very much money, or without any money, actually, she did it. And so that's why when I was looking at you know, having you on the air, I think that many of the things that she did are things that you have suggested. And so I'm not sure if she read your stuff first, because she's been very successful in it. And you have so many good ideas on how to get good publicity, free publicity. And of course, as you said, free publicity is not free, because you have to put the labor in.
Yeah, the labor, and you know, there's still a few expenses like stamps and whatever. But the real amazing thing is that the stuff that we can get free can actually be more effective than something we might have to pay for. So I've seen that over and over again. We authors are the ones who are the most passionate about our books. We're the ones who know our books the best, and if we take the trouble to also know what marketing is, true marketing, that the marketing that's all about finding our audience and finding what our readers need and like, as opposed to just selling books, we can do absolutely amazing things on literally, you know, we used to say pennies. That penny doesn't buy anything anymore, but dollars easily, just a few.
Now, when, you know, I talk to a lot of writers, and some of them have gotten involved in all sorts of scams with hiring publicists and people to help them get their books out there. And as you said, a writer knows their book the best, and they know when something is real and authentic, and it's important that they be careful out there, because I've just recently talked to several writers who've lost quite a bit of money by hiring people who could not deliver on their promises.
I know. I have so many clients. I wish I had come in contact with them before they had already made their mistakes. But I think that's human nature. We tend to make our mistakes first, learn from them, and then go back and correct. But I know I could save through the client approach or through my book could save writers so much money if I could just get to them earlier before they had suffered so much.
Yes, because writers do have to know what they have to do, how to. Well, we could talk about your five P's. We won't mention the sixth one because we're on air.
And it's not in poetry, so we can't get away with it, right?
Exactly. But what are your five P's in publicity?
Dear, now you've said it that way. My father used to say that, but my mind focused on the last one.
I'm sorry, you can't. Okay,
you
well,
won't let me say that one.
I'll say it with prior planning prevents poor performance.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And your father was right.
Yes, he was. and not only that, but there's so many P's in terms of publicity and performance and marketing words that P's are kind of a favorite poetic letter of mine.
And platform,
yes,
the ever.
Platform's a good one.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and that's an interesting one to talk about a little bit, if you don't mind, because a lot of new authors coming in, and even older ones for that matter, don't think they have a platform. They're new. They've written their first book. Maybe they're just thinking about writing their first book. They know that they're going to have to get an agent or a publisher or convince editors or talk show hosts like you to be interested in their book, and they don't think they have anything to tell them about themselves. And they're absolutely wrong. We can always find something, because if you've been interested enough in writing to write a book, think of all the unfinished books out there, right, that are lying around in drawers. And here's a person who's actually finished one. That takes persistence. And persistence involves more than just sitting at the typewriter and writing the book. They probably took a class. They probably went to a writer's conference. They've done something that they could mention in a query letter that would include information about their platform, which is really only another word for resume. So if they really search their own background, there's so much more to tell somebody other than that I always wanted to write, which probably is the most overused phrase in a query letter in the world. And they can find it. Maybe they worked on their high school newspaper, and you could combine that with a little anecdote. I mean, we're writers. We can tell little stories that might entertain whoever's getting our letter or our query letter. So, yes, you can find your platform. And then, of course, you can work on building it, too.
Now, when we're talking about getting publicity, where should an author focus? What are the best social mediums now, and also how important is it to get out the media releases to different venues?
You alluded to it, the place where you can find the most people the fastest is on the web. And that includes bloggers, it includes the social networks. The trick is to remember that you are a storyteller. Even if you are a nonfiction writer, you have a story to tell, and that Buy My Book is probably my least favorite three words. You get the message out there of how your book can benefit a person, or do what I call the BGBs, is let them know the dangers that they may suffer if they don't buy your book. You never say buy my book. And my two favorite platforms are Facebook and Twitter. And one of the reasons Twitter is a favorite is because anybody who hasn't tried Twitter recently should go back and look. They've updated it so that there's more intercommunication available and access to images. And they don't frown at Twitter about being commercial, if you will. So when you are doing a show like this, there's no objection at all just to going on and raving and saying, "Hey, come join me. I'm going to be on radio and listen to what I have to say or call in or whatever." So I really like Twitter, and then I like LinkedIn. At times when you really need to be doing serious networks, working like finding bloggers who might be interested in your topic.
And Facebook.
Facebook, I think, is more interpersonal, and people are touchier about being told. So I make it very clear that it's my personal... There are two ways you can attack Facebook. One was with a fan page, which honestly I've never done because I don't want to double my work. I'm as frugal with my time, in a sense, as I am with my money. But I do just use my regular personal Facebook page to let people know what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis. And I'm a writer, and I'm an active writer. So I tell them what I'm doing. I take photos of what I'm doing as I do it, and I post it on Facebook. That includes things like movies, and I always I always saw a movie today, and here's what I learned about writing from it. So I try to turn what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis on Facebook around to writing, and it isn't hard to do because that's what I love and that's what I do.
Now, when writers, well, first of all, writers should actually be working on their platform before their book even comes out, if possible.
Right, right. Now is the time, regardless of where you are. It's never too early and it's never too late. Now. Now is the word.
And just get your name out there, because that's the important thing, that, and you mentioned this repeatedly in your book, branding.
Yes, yes. And first-time authors believe that they need to brand their book. And certainly there's something to that. We kind of need to do a little pivot just before our book is published, because we need then to be talking about the title of our new book. But your major brand is you. Your name, the kind of writer you are. It's a little more difficult for multi-genre writers like me, but it's still about, it sounds very Trumpish right now, but it's really still about us. People want to know about the person who is writing their book. If you are a John Grisham fan, you know you're a John Grisham fan. If you've read all his books, you may not remember all of his titles, but the name John Grisham you remember. And you can, with keywords on the web, you can always find his newest book or one of the old ones that you read before that you want to read again. So it's your name that's important, and that's where your brand should go.
Now, when you, of course, one of the best ways to do that is blogging is a good way. Going to events, being part of book fests and all of that type of thing is another wonderful way to get your name out there.
Absolutely, and you know, promotions are wonderful, but I have a saying: if you want to be you want a successful promotion, then you have to promote the promotion. So if you go after, say, a stint on a radio show like yours, to just do that is a disservice to you, it's a disservice to your book, and it's a disservice to the radio host and the radio station who's doing you the favor of having you. You have access to what John Kramer calls a million eyeballs. I don't know, maybe he got it from somebody else, but it's a phrase that's bandied about for promotion on the web. Why not tell people about it? To expect one person to do all the work. As a matter of fact, if you do a book signing in a bookstore, generally speaking, bookstores aren't great marketers. If they were, probably so many of them wouldn't have gone out of business. You need to help them with the marketing for that book signing. If you don't want to just sit there and twiddle your thumbs for 2 hours. So figure that into your plans. It isn't just about getting that promotion or doing that promotion. It's also about letting people know, people who want to support you, people who are interested in what you're doing, people who need what you're doing, to come to your event or your promotion or support it in some other way.
Well, now, as you said, all of this is in your book, and I think it's just a fantastic book for writers, and it is available,
primarily on Amazon. It's also available in a lot of university libraries where I've spoken to been guest speaker in writing classes and that kind of thing. But the easiest way is to just
go to Amazon.
Go on Amazon and use their fantastic search engine and type in my name or my book by my book.
And they can go to your go to your website, which is called howtodoitfrugally.com.
Right.
And there they can get both of your books, and they can see both of your books, the promoter and
Frugal
also
Book Promoter and the Frugal Editor, yes.
And the Frugal Editor.
And very soon, probably by August, getting great book reviews.
Ooh.
Frugally and ethically.
Okay. That's going to be a very interesting book, and I know I'll have you back on when that comes out.
I'd love that.
Now, I'm going to have to take another quick commercial break, but I want to come back, and we're going to put another hat on your head, and this time I think with a red pencil stuck in it, because we're going to talk to Carolyn Howard Johnson, the editor. Okay?
Oh, good. Looking forward to it.
Okay.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Larson & Larson is a proud sponsor of Joy on Paper. Our law firm has the experience and knowledge to help you protect your valuable intellectual property, from trademark, copyright, and patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida are here to advise you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com. That's Larson & Larson, your intellectual property attorneys.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I'm back with Carolyn Howard Johnson, who is going to take the red pencil out of her hair and tell us what it's like to be an editor. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. Oh, yes, little editor me.
That's it. Well, you are like the queen of editors here in the book publishing world. This book is fantastic. It is probably the best book about editing that I have ever read.
Wow, what a nice thing. Can I get you to put that in print for me to use in my promotion?
I will, because I really think it. I've read dozens and dozens of books on editing, but yours is fantastic. And, of course, one of the the things, I was recently talking to a writer, and I had said, well, she's been editing her book, and she's been editing her book for a while and going over it and over it. And I realized after talking to her, she had never printed it out. She's doing the editing on the screen. And so I said, well, you have to print it out. You have to see it. It has to be on paper.
Yeah.
because you'll never catch, you know, all the errors and all the things.
And you know what? You'll never catch them all anyway, but you'll come a lot closer to it if you've done a read-through, at least one in a printout.
Oh,
and double-spaced.
Absolutely. Double-spaced.
And it also even helps to do a read in PDF as well as your manuscript, your Word manuscript or your word processor manuscript.
Exactly, because there is really, it is the printed word. You know, it's that joy on paper, and that just to see it on paper, your eyes, I think, react differently to seeing the printed word.
And you'll also see something about the organization of your book differently when you're reading it. In real time as opposed to on a screen. There's something about it where all of a sudden you see that you've, I don't know, duplicated a chapter or said the same thing in two different chapters a little bit different way, or interrupted your own thought and then gone back to it when you didn't need to, that kind of thing.
So, well, let's start there. You want to print out your book, and you want to go through it at least once, and perhaps twice, and perhaps three times.
Yes, I know my book advises you to do it several times, and I know most authors are rolling their eyes and saying, really? But really, yes.
Well, if you're lucky enough and you have one of those sisters who can catch every single typo she ever sees, you might be able to eliminate one of those rounds, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and then if you plan to hire another editor, another great professional editor, then what you're doing is getting it so clean that next editor will be able to even go one layer deeper.
And
truly finish off the job for you.
And let's mention the word again, what you said, professional editor.
Yes. Well, we all need one. And it used to be that our publisher provided one, you know, in the days
the big houses. You know, I was...
really big houses like Kennedy and Nassau's. Why is my brain going blank? But you know who I mean.
Oh, I know.
It takes you by the hand and leads you and does fantastic editing work and makes suggestions and actually helps you mold your book where it needs work. Those days are pretty much gone forever.
Yeah, I was talking to perhaps one of the most famous editors of all time, Bina Kamlani, who worked, you know, with Saul Bellow. You know, that's a pretty good reference. And of course, she's worked with many other great authors like Margaret George. And, you know, you don't find many Bina Kamlanis in this world anymore.
You don't find them to begin with, and the publishers can't afford them.
Exactly.
So you're really more on your own. One of my writing friends who's been published, both self-published and partner. She's been published, partner published, self-published, and traditionally published. And she says publishers today, a nearly perfect quote, expect a book to be 99% edited when you originally submit it.
And so do agents. They don't. Oh, they don't want books anymore. If they see a book that comes across to them, and they say, you know, they know they can't submit it to the publisher, and they themselves within their own, you know, agency, they don't have anyone there who can, you know, sit for hours and days and months editing a book.
Yes, and the scary part about that is that it has encouraged some some agents to actually provide editors that the author must pay for, and that the agent then takes a kickback for, and it feels dishonest, and it often is.
Yes, that's
it sets up the whole industry for even more scams, and new writers are just sitting ducks for scams because they're passionate about what they've got. They know it's an uphill climb. They're a little bit scared. They know they need help, and they fall into all kinds of really bad situations. Your agent might tell you your book needs edited before they'll consider it, but don't use their editor. And don't pay for the one that they suggest.
Exactly. You have to find your own professional editor, and there are different professional groups that have people who are experienced editors, and you have to do the research and find out, because you don't want to be scammed, and you want somebody who actually has experience in the type of book you're writing too. I mean, if you're writing a romance novel, it's different than if you're writing, some nonfiction or historical book.
Yeah, so. or even within genres, a historical fiction writer might find a wonderful editor who does romances, but she might not be that great at finding little historical references that you might be a little bit off on. You know, those minor errors that the experts would catch.
Well, here we've had.
By the way, the frugal editor gives you all the questions you ever need to ask, and the actual process of how to attack finding an editor.
And that's one of the reasons your book is so valuable. But of course, the other reasons you have just so many sort of case studies or examples of things that are. Just need to be fixed before you can send a book out. And you do it in a very nice way. It's very accessible and sometimes funny.
And I hope it helps people editing and writing their marketing materials too. I really work at that, because often an author will find the money to find a great editor for their manuscript, but then when it comes to actually doing some of their marketing, they don't realize that they might need some help with that too. Those things need to be just as clean in terms of typos and grammar as the manuscript, but there are also lots of little tricks, just like there are wonderful little tricks in writing fiction that you need to know before you consider your book finished.
Because when you're submitting to agents, they have some of them are downright persnickety.
Oh yeah, as you say, they have to be. Their reputation is at stake too. Then you know what? They don't have time to. I happen to have an agent who really babies her authors. But they are far and few between. They have to make a living too. And think of the number of query letters they get across their desk of books that they can represent. Your query letter needs to be clean. It needs to be a knockout. It needs to do what it needs to do. It needs to do it fast in one page. And otherwise, you've wasted your email. You've wasted your stamp. You've wasted your time. And you wasted their time. One of my favorite chapters in that is the interviews I did with agents, asking them what their pet peeves in query letters was.
Oh, tell us some of those.
The top one is when you're talking about your platform. We already talked about this a little bit. Your platform is to say, I always wanted to write, or I wanted to write since I was 3 years old. You know, you're a writer. You can do better than that. you can find more detail than that. You can make it into a little anecdote. If that's really, truly all you can find to say, you can make it into a little anecdote. That was their top one. And then there were things like one editor said, someone had such a cute sense of humor. One of them said, if you use multiple exclamation points, you give me the impression that you are a yapping chihuahua on speed. So, and these were wonderful, wonderful agents. I mean, they were willing to give me the time to help you authors, you know, to help me help you authors. I was so impressed with the number of agents who were happy to help out.
Well,
they're not all ogres, I guess is what I'm saying. You don't need to go into this scared to death.
Yeah. Well, as you said, they want to make money. They're always looking for a great writer that they can
without writers, they'd be out of business.
Exactly.
That,
they
right?
want to move. They want to move a great book onto a publisher as fast as they can, so that it will be published and it'll be out there. And then, of course, the author has to start promoting it. So that's why they have to always go back and to come to your website, and howtodoitfrugally.com is a great place to start. You have a lot of very interesting links there. And
yeah, go to the writer's resources in the little link at the top of the home page, and you'll find all kinds of, you know, my favorite contests, media release distributors, publishers, all kinds of things in there to help authors.
Well, it's a great website to go to, and I like what you mentioned about contests, because contests really can be very, very useful. Again, you have to check it out that you do the right one. But it's always a great thing to have on your bio. So I just want to thank you today, Carolyn Howard Johnson, for being on my program. I know I'm going to have you back when your next book comes out. And it's just, I recommend to everyone, both of these wonderful books about how to do things frugally, which we all need to do, and of course your beautiful book of poetry, because we all need some beauty in our life and some inspiration, and Imperfect Echoes, which is available, on Amazon, is just a wonderful book to read. I'm sure it's also on Barnes & Noble, and I'll probably check it out there too. And so, Carolyn Howard Johnson, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you. It was lovely, Patsy.
Oh,
bye-bye.
Be well, and talk to you soon.
Okay, I hope so.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Great. Bye. Whoa, that was nice. She's a really great person. And as I was saying, I think you will really find her books very helpful. And she's good. I mean, she's a good writer. So when you get, sometimes you get these self-help books and you say, oh, I wish I could rewrite that book. But in this case, you'll find that her writing is excellent, top-notch, and a lot of things there that will be helpful to you. So, anyway, if you have time, go and look at her webpage. And meanwhile, I just want to say to everyone, thank you for being here today. On Thursday, I have a wonderful author, a local author, Suban Brevnik, who's going to be talking about her book here about the Biltmore Hotel in Bel Air. And it's going to be a wonderful interview. So join me on Thursday. Bye now.